You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
What is going on? Barred Out Breakdown, episode 200. And tonight, we are joined by Ryan Mendez, of Yellow Card. You're listening to Yellow Card. That's right. We got Yellow Card hanging out with us tonight. Ryan, what's going on, brother?
I was just thinking about how I played all that guitar stuff on that guitar right there. that guitar I've played on every single record I've played on. And all that stuff I was listening to, I was like, I can use that guitar for that.
For the gearheads out there, is that a PRS?
It's an ESP Horizon, original Horizon that I got in like 1999.
Nice.
I got it on eBay for like $500 because the story that I heard is that it was like some pawn shop selling it and someone had come into them and like pawned it because they needed to pay their gas bill or something and they didn't know what it was worth. And the pawn shop also didn't know what it was worth. So I got it on, I don't know, it was probably a $1,600 guitar that I got for $500, and it's been one of my favorites.
So it's like an actual, it's an ESP, not an LTD.
100% legitimate, real, original ESP Horizon.
That is one of those pawn shop steals that every gearhead wants.
And what's crazy about it too is it's like the reason why I've used it on so many records, and Neil Avron, our producer, like he loves this guitar because it stays in tune better than like anything we would ever have around. So we would just, it would just be like the rock. We would use it for everything.
I don't know anything about gear, but that's super cool. I love a good deal.
I would never have guessed that that was a Horizon from like seeing it from like where I'm at right now. Because normally people don't like, that is not the most standard like ESP model that people have. That is so cool.
Yeah, it's this is like just the, I don't know, the finish, everything about it. I love it. It plays so well. The tuning is amazing. It actually has five-way switch, so it has like coil splitting as well. So you can do some like cool single coil stuff. It's like one of my all-time favorite guitars.
That is sick. All right. I got my gearhead out of the out of the way on the tour, so on this podcast. But let's dive into this like huge announcement that you guys put out on literally Valentine's Day.
It was Valentine's Day, wasn't it?
It was Valentine's Day. You guys are going on tour. You guys are doing the 20th anniversary of Ocean Avenue. You guys have some sick bands that are on there, bands that you have played with you in the past. Kind of talk to us about how all this came up.
I think we're all still a little bit surprised, honestly, because we were talking about this just a tiny bit before we started. There's a lot of bands out there that'll be like, oh, we're breaking up, and they know that in a couple of years they're going to get back together and do a reunion tour, right? That was never us, ever. Even though people will accuse us of it, but it's just not the case. Like we, you know, our last show was March 25th, 2017, and that was it. We thought there would never be a Yellow Card ever again, like legit. And there was no talk of it for years. And our booking agent had kind of like slowly started coming to us over the last few years and be like, hey guys, the scene is really coming back, you know, even before the pandemic, she was like, yeah, emo night's starting to happen. Like the scene seems to be coming back, and then pandemic happened. It's like, okay, well, whatever. And then afterwards, whatever you want to call it. We're like, okay, so I guess this scene now, you know, people are done with this pandemic. They want to go out. They want to go outside. They want to go to shows. They want to do stuff. Something about this scene of music is just, I don't know. I feel like it, in some ways it's bigger than it ever has been, which is insane to me. But it's just, I don't know what it is about it. And anyways, our booking agent came to us and she was like, hey, we have some opportunities. And she tried a few times and we were just like, no, we're not a band. Like, no. And then at some point she was like, hey, so Ocean Avenue, 20 years coming up, you know, this was at this point, probably a year or two ago. And, at that point we kind of started thinking about it and we started just kind of talking and discussing and realized that it might be a cool opportunity. And she had this idea for us to kind of, the first thing we'd ever do would be Riot Fest in Chicago, which we just did in September. The last time we played that, I think was like 10 years prior, we played with Fall Out Boy. And it was insane. It was one of the best shows that we have ever had in Chicago. So we were like, yeah, that would be amazing. And she's like, you guys should do Riot Fest. And then we should do a tour for Ocean Avenue. And we kind of just were like, all right, we're going to trust you and just sort of let you, you know, tell us what you think should happen. And so then we spent some time kind of figuring out the right package of bands. And what we ended up kind of like settling on or sort of like where it kind of led the package that's now, I am so stoked because these are some of my best friends in the music scene, some amazing bands. My only thought is that I wish that Amberlynn and Story of the Year were both on the whole thing, just because I love both of those bands, love all those guys. But scheduling just is what it is, and they couldn't. Love Mayday Parade as well, toured with them a million times. This Wild Life, I've met those guys a couple times. Our singer Ryan did some solo stuff over the last multiple years, and I think he's toured with them a good amount. Mm-hmm. They seem to put on a really good show, and they're good dudes. So I think overall the vibe of the tour is going to be like everyone has known each other for a long time. Everyone gets along. Everyone's friends. I think if you told someone 20 years ago that Amberlynn is Story of the Year and Yellow Card were all going to tour together, I think people would be like, that's, it sounds like
pretty standard.
Yeah,
I was about to say it sounds like it's 2007 all over again.
Yeah, what's crazy is Warped Tour 2004, before I was in the band, I had my old band, a band called Staring Back, from Santa Barbara. We were on like the like bottom of the barrel, most like nothing stage, doing the tour, driving ourselves in a Suburban, and like we I just remember that Yellow Card and Story of the Year were the two biggest bands on that tour, the two hugest main stage bands, just killing it every single day. And it's just crazy to think about that and then think about it now.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because Justin and I were just like doing a quick little live stream and I was reminiscing about the first time I saw Yellow Card, and it was that Warped Tour, and it was the Randall's Island date. So like I'm a Long Island guy. So it was the summer going into my junior year of high school, and for some reason my mom thought it was a good idea to allow me to get on a train and then get on a shuttle and go to Randall's Island to go see Warped Tour. But she let me do it, and I'll never forget like seeing Yellow Card main stage, like after a long day of the sun just kicking the crap out of me, like mud on me, like probably 4 inches of mud just caked on me, and like I was really drained and like just exhausted. But then like seeing Yellow Card main stage at night, like with the whole light production and everything. And I was super far away, 'cause like you said, Yellow Card was just like blew the heck up that summer, and yeah, all the other stages are done. And there was just like thousands and thousands of people watching just Yellow Card at night. Like it was epic. It really was. Like, it's a very special moment for me. And
that's awesome. That's a really cool memory.
I'm super excited too, though, that the fact that you kind of have this anniversary tour with kind of like, yes, you guys and Story of the Year and Amberlynn were like that like early 2000s wave, but then you have like the next wave of like, all right, then Mayday Parade came,
yeah,
and now, like,
yep,
they passed the torch on This Wild Life, and then like I'm curious how the Emo Night Brooklyn is mixing in. So I would love a little more insight on that. So are they just doing like one opening set, or are they going to be playing like in between each of the bands?
My understanding is that they're going to open, and this might change. And I also am not 100% sure of this. They were kind of, it was like kind of the last thing that was added to the bill. And I have heard it discussed both like kind of like being in between bands and opening this show, but I'm pretty sure it's just going to be opening. And if it's not, if it's in between, honestly, either way, I think it's going to be awesome because like the people that are going to be at these shows are going to be here to hear that music, and they're going to be getting it all night. And it's like, let's just lean into it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I do think that they're going to do like a set before the show starts, I believe.
Well, if you want my opinion, I think having it between bands would be epic. Yeah. It'd be something cool and different. And I love when shows are a little different than like what we're used to.
For sure.
And just keeping it going the whole night. Like that would be a party.
Yeah, I know that that's a possibility. I think it's just logistics depending on like what their setup is with other bands setting up and stuff. But I also think that I remember there's being some discussion about them, like, you know, having something that can roll out in between bands very quickly and easily. And there's been a lot of obviously logistical kind of figuring out what this is going to be. So I wish I could give you a straight answer. It's definitely going to be one of the other, you know, either way, it's going to be cool.
I'm like their target demographic 100%. Like I'm almost 36 years old. Like I'm definitely the type of person that should be going to emo nights, but I've never been to one. But then we had like a festival last summer and like we hosted an elder emo night, but it was just like live bands playing emo sets. And that's the only one I've ever been to, but they look sick and I probably should get to one. I don't know why I haven't gone to one.
It's still funny to me. I still find the term emo just, you know, attributed to this scene of music funny, because the stuff that I grew up like listening to, what was emo to me was not this kind of music at all. So like the idea of like bands in this scene, like Hot Topic type stuff being emo is still funny to me. So it just is what it is.
Yeah. I think in like the early 2000s when I was, you know, really grinding it out at shows and stuff, I probably would have been like, kind of like, no, I'm not emo, dude. Like I'm a scene kid. I'm not an emo kid. But like, now I kind of just like embrace it now at this point.
Now it's
life.
Just become like, okay, yeah, just that's what people call it now. And it's just whatever, you know, it's like, to me, I just always view this as like, this is all just variations of pop punk, you know, like that's what it's always was to me. To me, emo is like Sunny Day Real Estate, you know, it, like that, like sub pop stuff, like serious indie, you know what I mean? Like, which is very different from like, you know, Fall Out Boy, My Chemical Romance, like Hot Topic type stuff. So it's like all that stuff just came from pop punk, you know?
Just different variations of how they like took like the DC emo scene and like integrated it into what we now know as like, you know, pop punk, even though Billy Joe Armstrong absolutely hates that term.
Yes, it's totally just, funny.
It's what it is. It's just, it's combining punk music with like pop top 40 and there you go.
For me, like the Descendants were like, they were really one of the big, big pop punk, like, you know, destroyers. Like they, when I think pop punk, I think Descendants, I think obviously Green Day, and, you know, and obviously then of course Blink came on a little later and got massive, but like those bands really, us and even Fall Out Boy and all these other bands are like that's the stuff that we started out kind of wanting to play, and the Fat Records stuff as well. That was a little more technical, but like it all just has roots in pop punk, you know?
Yep.
Well, I'm a pop punk kid. I guess that's also. I embrace it. And
yes,
sometimes we talk to like old school punk dudes and old, like just hardcore bands. And I'm just like, I'm going to be completely transparent. I'm the pop punk guy.
Yeah.
And I'm all for it.
I'm the hardcore metal. But there's always been like, guy.
you're a what?
I'm the hardcore metal deathcore guy. Yeah. But I also love pop punk and I love whatever iteration or wave of emo is currently out at the time. Yeah. I'll listen to it and I love it.
I mean, what's your metal leaning? Like what subgenre of metal?
Oh man. So I love everything. I love progressive metal. I love black metal. I love death metal. I love death core.
I don't even know those are all things.
I'll listen to Burzum, Behemoth, and I'll listen to Suicide Silence, and I'll listen to Limp Bizkit. I love new metal. Like, I love new metal. I'll listen to Korn, System of a Down. I'll listen to 80s glam metal. Like, I'll listen to Motley Crue. It doesn't matter. Yep. It's to me, it's all the same. But I think my my first love is hardcore. I love hardcore punk. Everything about it. I can talk for hours about hardcore punk. If you want to talk about California hardcore punk, you want to talk about New York, Boston, I'll go into all of it. That's just my thing.
That's awesome. I asked because like metal is like, I listen to these days forever. All I listen to is metal and electronic music. That's it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's like, this is like, I'm all about Swedish metal, Scandinavian stuff. And so when you say metal, I'm like, oh, I'm listening. Yeah.
Would you consider like Cryptodira that new, like, I know that they're a New York band, but I'm pretty sure that like they're as progressive, like as you can get, like prog rock as they can get.
I am unfamiliar with them.
Okay. Yeah. They're hockey guys as well.
I think that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So, awesome. You know, as we're talking about the anniversary tour, you know, I'm seeing a bunch of those low ticket warnings, sold out warnings. Like, you know, I'm sure you guys were a little hesitant, like, to be on a hiatus or even like technically broken up at the time. Like, maybe you were like, are people still going to come out for this? And then like seeing this early response has probably been like, all right, this is going to be sick. Were you a little nervous at first?
We were a lot nervous. I mean, well, it's like, I mean, and like I was mentioning before, it's like, it definitely wasn't a hiatus. Like, we were just straight broken up, you know? And so I know there's something to be said for like a band that's been gone for a long time coming back. Like, that usually can be worth something in terms of people wanting to see them. And so I know that there is some of that, but also like, you just never know, especially post pandemic, you know, like everyone's going to be touring. There's a billion shows. You know, I feel like we're kind of sort of getting into a recession a little bit, like money's tight. Like, how are people going to go to all these shows? And so I'm just thinking, okay, well, I'm just going to trust in the team that we have, like our booking agent that we've had since, I mean, she's been booking the band since before I was there, before they were signed to, I mean, geez, before they were before on Capitol. Yeah. Before Capitol, like, she's been around. She's the oldest team member. She is unreal. Her name's Corey. And she's incredible. And she, the whole time, she's like, nope, everyone wants to see you. It's going to be huge. It's going to be huge. And we're like, dude, you're going to come to us and tell us that we're going to be like, you're going to book us into amphitheaters. We've never done that before. Like, even when the band was the biggest that they ever were on Ocean Avenue in 04, like a year before I joined the band, I went to go see them, cause I've been friends with the guys forever. I went to go see them at the Palladium in Hollywood, which is nowhere near as big as the YouTube theater that we're playing in LA. And we're just like, dude, are you sure? Like, we're not that, like, we're nervous, honestly, for sure. And then day one of artist presale, so many cities like were very close to selling out, and we were all just completely blown away. Like, we had absolutely no expectation. We were very worried about playing these really big venues and thinking like, yeah, there'll be some people that come, of course. And some of the markets will be good, but like, we in no way were expecting how it's actually been.
Yeah. I could personally speak for the Charlotte date. Like, my wife and I on pre-sale day were trying to get tickets, and it was like super stressful. And then all the general admission tickets like are gone. Like, for Charlotte, like, all that's left in Charlotte are the VIP, like the side stage package that you guys added, and like some of the other VIP ones or lawn seats. Like, that's it. And that's, it's
so
like,
crazy. Yeah.
I'm not going to say that like the Charlotte scene's the best scene in the country either. So like, the fact that that's happening in Charlotte, I'm sure it was way harder in, like, for example, like New York, that's completely sold out. Like, some of those markets was probably way harder than Charlotte too.
Yeah. And also, like, after a day or two, I mean, some of the shows were borderline sold out even like before it went in on general on sale, like between like the artist presale, and then the next day was like the Live Nation and Spotify pre-sale, and then the third day was actual on sale. And by the time it got there, some of the shows were basically sold out. And so I was thinking about this, and I was like, and I asked our manager, I was like, hey, what can I, I'm just interested. Can you send me like a spreadsheet of our ticket counts for the final tour that we did, just to like compare? Cause I was like, that tour, some of the shows were really good, and we added some extra West Coast shows at the end, cause they're really good. But like, you know, there were a lot of the shows that were just kind of like middle of the road, you know, like 1,000 people in Minneapolis, you know, and didn't even sell the venue out. And then this now, like there's like multiple thousands of tickets sold already, and it's only been on sale for 2 weeks. It's like, I don't understand. It's crazy to us.
I think a lot of that comes to kind of like our previous conversation talking about, you know, are you one of those bands that are going to go on hiatus and come back, and every 2 years you're going to have a reunion show? Like, I've been to so many different bands' final tour so many times. And I think that was kind of that, you know, 2016, 2017, that was very much what was going on. You had a lot of bands that were like, we're going to do a one more final tour. And then 2 years later, we're going to do another final tour. So I think everybody had this mentality of like, oh, it's Yellow Card. They'll be back. And then 2 years went by, and then 3 years went by, and then the pandemic hit. And then another 3 years went by, and everyone was just like, okay, so I guess this isn't going to happen. And then y'all played Riot Fest, and people started getting like, okay, maybe they're actually going to come back. Maybe like we took that for granted, like, you know, in 2016, 2017. And I think it's kind of like understanding that, one, it's an iconic album that I think everyone in their 30s kind of grew up to. But also, you guys are such an iconic band because all these emo nights that are blowing around, they start playing Ocean Avenue or Lights and Sound or Way Away, and you have the entire crowd screaming, whether or not they're 18 years old and they don't even remember you guys being a band, or they're 38 years old and they remember buying, you know, Ocean Avenue, pre-saving it at like Sam Goody. you know, I'm aging myself terribly, but
FYE.
There's tons of it. Like, I remember like buying tickets to Yellow Card shows at like the ticket stand in my mall, just like walking up being like, here's $20, give me my Yellow Card ticket. But I think like to my point, like a lot of people took that for granted in 2016, 2017. And now they're kind of like, oh shit, y'all are back. This might be the last tour. I might see you guys. Let's jump on this, or let's go to When We Were Young Fest to catch you guys, or let's do this to make sure that they can kind of get that experience in.
To me, it's like, I think about it, sure, like, where were so many people in 2017, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, the show was really good, and we added multiple LA shows, and it was awesome, but it's like, a lot of the other, like, non-huge major markets were like, oh, they were fine, you know? There weren't any shows that were, like, terrible, or, you know, they all were pretty good, but, like, this is like nothing the band has ever experienced before, even at the height of Ocean Avenue, you know? And so we're like, okay, well, let's just enjoy it, you know?
That's wild. So I'm just curious, the New York date, is that Jones Beach?
No, it's at some pier something or other.
Oh, dude, that's a sick venue.
That's what we've been told. Was it pier 30 something, 33, 35?
Yeah, like it's right. I think that's where the first Sad Summer was, like the Fed. Okay. And the pictures and videos from it are like out of a movie. It's a sick spot.
Yeah, we've heard that it's amazing. I think it's on the newer, kind of on the newer side. And it's, yeah, we're super looking forward to it. And it's sold out really fast. And when is this coming out? When is this podcast coming out?
April 11th.
Okay, so then by now it probably would have been announced that we're adding more shows there.
Sick. Okay, you heard it here first.
Yeah. Well, not really. we'll say it.
Yeah. I'm not 100% sure exactly what, but I'm pretty sure another New York show and another New Jersey show.
Nice.
Yeah.
Sick. And then was that second Jacksonville show an add-on, or was that always? Yeah.
Nope, that was an add-on. Like, because that show, I mean, that some of these venues sold some of these ones, the Jacksonville, I'll come back to that because we're all even more blown away by that. But the the New York, the LA, Jacksonville, some of those shows, like the first hour, there were like 3,000 tickets sold. And we're just, it's funny because, you know, I tell you guys this and you're like, yeah, but I'm telling you, we were like, are you fucking kidding? Like, where did this come from? You know, like, we were not expecting that at all. So the Jacksonville show, because it's the band's hometown, later that day, our agent came and they're like, hey, Live Nation wants to add a second show. And we're like, dude, first of all, okay, it's amazing that so many tickets have sold, and it's okay, it's clearly going to sell out, which we didn't even think it would. But like, adding a whole nother show, I mean, that's there's no way we'll sell that many tickets. She's like, no, they're confident. And so we said, okay. And so then we added the show. The reason that's funny to us is because the band has had such like a weird relationship with Jacksonville over the years. Like, yeah, there have been so many people in Jacksonville that like kind of say like, well, F those guys, they moved to California. And like some of the ex-member drama, still some like kind of local Jacksonville people are like, oh, fuck Yellow Card, you know? So there's just, you never know what you're going to get on any given Yellow Card tour. Sometimes a Jacksonville show will rip, and then sometimes it'll just be weird and we'll get heckled, or, you know what I mean? Like, it's just been so weird over the years. So we just had no idea what to expect. So the fact that it sold that fast and they're added a second date, definitely not planned ahead of time. And we're all just as there's no one out there that is more surprised than us, I promise you.
So I think it's also like, it kind of goes to, you know, it's not only going to be like people from Jacksonville going to that show, because you only two Florida dates, Tampa and Jacksonville. So you'll probably have people from like Orlando. You'll have people from South Florida going up to that show. Tons of people from South Florida going up to that show, because they're just going to take 95 all the way up. But I think that kind of coincides with just, you know, the sheer size of Florida and just like the amount of people that are going to be buying tickets specifically, one, to see, you know, Yellow Card in essentially what is their hometown. But also just because the only other closest date would be either Tampa or driving all the way to Atlanta, which is not feasible for someone from like, you know, Miami, West Palm Beach.
Yeah. And obviously, like, I wish we could have played South Florida. I wish we could have played like 30 more places that we couldn't, but we were very much like, we had a window of time scheduling wise with everyone's availability. And so we unfortunately had some cities had to be left off, and, you know, it, but then, you know, as much as it sucks for the other people, then maybe some of the other shows are a little bigger because people are forced to drive, unfortunately, even though it's not like we've tried to do that, but we didn't have any other option. You know,
you can't please everybody. There'll be some Reddit thread talking about how Yellow Card hates Miami. Whatever.
That's correct.
Grow over it. Get over it.
100%. 100% true.
And I guess since we're talking shows, you know, a couple of years ago, like pretty much out of the blue, the When We Were Young festival and that was announced. And, you know, year one went off. And a lot of people were like even questioning that. But then year two's here and you guys are playing year two. And I'm not going to lie, like, this is my version of the festival. Like, I was really disappointed when Something Corporate wasn't on year one, when you guys weren't on year one. And like, seeing this lineup, I'm like, all right, this one's right down my alley. And
yeah.
And I like how they have, you know, mixed in a few like of the new age current bands that are also playing that festival. And like that's super cool. And you know, like a band like Movements, that's just phenomenal, and they're doing great things right now. And, you know, Meet Me at the Altar and you know, Knuckle Puck and Magnolia Park, like that's freaking so cool to see them playing with like a Green Day and, you know, Blink-182 as well. So like, I guess, you know, when they approached you for the second one, were you just like, yes, we're in?
100%. Like, yeah, of course. And honestly we probably would have done the first year, but we couldn't because of Riot Fest. We were literally contractually not allowed to. So, but I'm not bummed that we ended up getting on this year, because for me, it's like, okay, original lineup, Blink and Green Day. It's like, okay. Like, I think that's big. I mean, I think that's bigger than year one even, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think, I'm super stoked on it. I love the fact that they added a second show. I hope they had a third show. I mean, they did three with the first year, you know, and the first show of this one sold out in like under 10 minutes. Yep. And then the second show that they added sold out in like 40 minutes. So it's like, okay, you could probably add a third show. What is it going to take 2 hours to sell out? You know what I mean? It's
they're going to milk it.
Yeah, for sure.
So, I'm actually like looking at the flyer, and I guess I didn't see this the first time. And I feel like this band was like my gateway drug into alternative music. And I feel like whoever put this on must have realized that as well. Like a lot of people in their mid-30s, this was probably what got them into this type of music. And that's that band Lit. Like,
oh, yeah, dude, for sure. I loved that first album.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember I was like probably in fifth grade when I discovered Lit. Like, you know, they had probably songs on the radio. That's probably how I found out.
Yeah, dude, they had like five huge singles off that record. It was back when MTV and the radio still played rock music. Well, I guess I should say back when the radio played rock music and MTV existed. So they had huge tons of singles off that record. They were massive.
Ziploc Bag is an anthem to my middle school years.
Big time.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, that's pretty cool to see that they're playing that.
Mikey, I thought you were going to say Michelle Branch got you into this music.
She did not.
I'm kind of stoked also, like, just logistically that we ended up doing the second year, because then obviously there were a lot of people wondering, like, you know, when it first was announced last year, like, is this going to be like Fire Festival or how's this going to go? Like, that's too many bands. Like, how are you going to pull this off? And then, of course, it's hilarious, not hilarious, I feel bad, but it's funny that they had to cancel the first day because of the wind, although it was the right call.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was.
But then the other shows apparently went off great. So I love that they could kind of get it all kind of sorted out, hopefully, and hopefully there'll be no issues, you know, for a year or two.
So let's, I kind of want to, because we kind of talked about it like super briefly, but Riot Fest last year was your first official kind of show back. Like, it was your first show in what, 6 years, seven, no, four, 5 years?
We're not a math podcast.
5.5 years.
We're not. So talk, like, what was it like coming out to, you know, a field full of either kids to adults and just ripping a set for the first time in like 5.5 years? Like, how did that feel?
It was one of the best shows the band's ever had, ever in the history of the band. I mean, when it was announced, the response online was like beyond overwhelming. And so on one hand, you look at this, you're like, oh, this is going to be crazy. Like, look at this response, but you never really know how that's going to translate to the show, you know? And it's like, we got so many messages, like people literally flying from all over the world. And I knew it was going to be good. And I thought it had potential to be really good, but I think it just blew us all away, honestly. And we were told, so we headlined the second stage. And we were up against the Misfits, who were headlining main stage. Yeah. And of all of the various bands that we could have gone up against, I was happy about that. Nothing against them, but like, there's not going to be too much overlap between our fans and theirs. So I think it was kind of ideal for both of our fan bases. And we were told that they sold 50,000 tickets and that 40,000 people were watching us. So, that's sure what it felt and looked like. It was absolutely mental. There was no way around it just being like completely mind blowing. And what's weird about it too is that not only was it crazy from the crowd, you know, and fans, etc., it also like went flawlessly. We had zero technical issues, which is totally something we've been plagued with for always. We always have stuff going on that's out of our control, but everything was perfect. We got to Chicago a whole week in advance and rehearsed many days, and we played, I'm not trying to be like arrogant, but like we played really well. Like we all felt super tight. Like we felt great. We played really well. We had no technical issues. The crowd was nuts. It was like, it literally couldn't have gone any better, honestly.
So I'm sure that just sparked the flame too and got you guys excited for the rest of this year.
It did. And obviously we've known about all this stuff since well before Riot Fest happened, but we weren't allowed to talk about it, of course.
Yeah.
So the fact that that went so well definitely like made us really stoked about all the stuff this year. We were, of course, already, but like, you know, it's like, you still just kind of want to see how it goes, you know? And it went so well that we're like, okay, like maybe next year will be really special. You know,
I just love how Riot Fest had 2 years of back to back, like, you know, Jacksonville juggernauts playing Riot Fest. In 2021, you had Limp Bizkit coming back, and then you had Yellow Card coming back last year. It's just such a cool thing to even just talk about every time everyone talks about like, oh, like what music came out of Florida? I was just like, well, you had Limp Bizkit and you had Yellow Card come from the same city. And people are always like, no, no, they didn't. I'm like, 100%. And it's hilarious. And I love both bands so much.
Creedence.
Yeah. And you have Creed too. They were technically like Jacksonville and Tampa or Clearwater too, right?
Yeah, something like that. I think some of the guys, I think Tremonti might have been Jacksonville. I don't know. I don't remember.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I even talk about like, you know, South Florida, you had like Poison the Well. You had so many like cool bands coming out of Florida in general. Yep. During that span of time from like 1996 to like, you know, 2010 for the most part. And even currently, like with bands like Meet Me at the Altar, you have Magnolia Park, you have a lot of really cool bands coming out of Florida, most recently, like A Day to Remember. So it's just really cool kind of like seeing, like, I always like to rep Florida here and there because our politics aren't the greatest, but at least our music is.
Well, for me, like, yeah, of course, that's true. One of my all-time favorite records, rock records, is The Moon Is Down from For the Seems Forever.
Yeah.
And obviously Florida, you know, legendary Florida band. That record, that's all I listened to forever when it first came out. Like, I love that album still to this day. Every single... All right. There we go. Sorry. we're finally in the lead. Four minutes left and we take the lead. So that album, that band's great. That album is amazing. So it's like, you're talking about Florida bands, Florida music, you know, there's a huge one. Love Amber Lynn, all, you know, all Florida boys. So,
yep.
Yeah. I can name like 100 bands from Florida.
Yeah.
That I love.
Of course. Yeah.
Tons. Copeland.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Copeland. Big time.
But, I'm just curious, like, where are you with, like, rooting for the Red Wings this season? I feel like if I was in your shoes, I would be like hoping for a tank. But like,
I'm past that. No, I would say I was never hoping for a tank, but there were obviously there were a couple of the past seasons where I was towards the end. I was like, okay, well, it would be cool to like get a better draft pick, right? Because like we're clearly in the middle of a rebuild. But the stupid NHL lottery system screwed us, even though we were like, I think we ended up getting like, I don't know, seventh pick and some of you know, the way that like the way the whole like lottery thing can work is just, I don't know. I think they need to rethink how it happens because I feel like teams get screwed and we've like never had high draft picks, even when we've been terrible the last multiple years. But I will say that this season is the first season I think that we're finally starting to come out the other side of the rebuild, I think.
Nice.
Okay. Yeah. I was just curious, like, you know, cause you're like, I'm sure if you look at those like percentage graphs, like the percentage for the Red Wings to make the playoffs is probably like less than 10% at this point. Right.
Honestly, no. I would, before the last week and a half, it was definitely higher. We were 2 points out of a wild card spot like 2 weeks ago.
Yep.
And then we've really gone on a bad streak lately, but I think it's still a conversation, but it's obviously not, it didn't look as nice as it did a couple weeks ago, but I'm not expecting it, but I would love to get, you know, this new crop of players, especially the young guys, some playoff experience, you know, because I think that, like I said, I think we're finally starting to trend upwards this year.
Amen. Cool. So I definitely want to talk way more just hockey and Red Wings. But before I do that, I do have a quick word from our sponsor, DraftKings. So the action never ends at DraftKings Sportsbook, especially this summer. With tons of ways to bet on all your favorite sports, you can fuel your fandom and feel the heat of the season like never before. Plus, right now, DraftKings Sportsbook is giving new customers a risk-free bet up to $1,000. That's right. Make your first bet up to $1,000. And if it doesn't win, you'll get another shot to cash in. You can throw down on all major action for baseball, golf, MMA, and more. Plus, with same game parlays, spreads, money lines, over unders, and props, your betting options feel endless. And right now is the perfect time to bet on DraftKings with the NHL playoffs starting. Throw down some money on your favorite team and, you know, take advantage of all the great offers DraftKings has. So, best of all, DraftKings is safe, secure, reliable, and you can deposit and withdraw your cash whenever you want. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code THPN. Make your first deposit and get a risk-free bet up to $1,000. That's promo code THPN. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details. So yeah, Ryan, before we started recording, I had to jump into it and like just kind of figure out why you were a Red Wings fan. But yeah. I guess for our listeners, can you just fill us in on why you are it sounds like a just Detroit fan across the board.
Yep. I'll just say real quick first that it's really weird to not see Patrick Kane on the ice for the Blackhawks. Just
yep.
It's very, very strange. Just because we're playing Blackhawks right now. So I'm from Detroit. I was born there. My mom moved her and myself out to Southern California when I was super young, like a year, year and a half. But the rest of our family stayed there. We would go back for like all holidays. I would spend summers there. So even though I grew up in Southern California, Detroit's always been, you know, a home, a second home, an original home, being born there. And I've been hardcore Detroit sports my whole life because the town that I grew up in, Santa Barbara, it's about 100 miles west of LA. So I don't really have any affiliation with LA sports at all. Never really did. And so it was just all Detroit sports as a kid. Unfortunately, that means signing up for a life of pain with the Lions. But I'm born into it. So I've just always been Detroit everything my whole life.
Now, I'm not going to feel bad for you for being a Lions fan because you had so many dominant years being a Red Wings fan. Like,
yeah,
you were absolutely spoiled in the 90s. And like, I'm guessing based on your age, you were probably like in high school, maybe like middle school at that time, like
yep.
when sports are like number one in your life. And then like yeah. to have your team literally be like a dynasty.
Like at the time, the best, absolutely. For those years, come on.
Yeah, the best.
Yeah.
Yes, without a doubt. but, four cups in 11 years and that lineup, come on.
Yeah. Did you feel like kind of like disconnected though, since like you weren't there, or were you still following just as
no, I still followed. Obviously, not being there to be able to go to games as much, but I always went whenever I could. And what's funny is I had a really, really horrible string of luck where they would lose every time I would go watch them play at the Joe, always. Like every single time I went to the Joe to watch the Wings, they would lose every time until I flew there for the literal last ever game at the Joe before they switched arenas and they won that game. So that was the first time I ever saw them win at the Joe, and it was their last game ever.
Nice.
It was pretty awesome. Yeah.
I think we always talk about, you know, just – especially when we have Red Wing fans that are on the podcast that are old enough to remember, you know, you would in the 1990s, you would just turn on your television. And even if you weren't watching hockey, you could be watching Home Improvement, or you'd be watching Full House, and you yep. just had a Red Wings jersey shoved in your face.
Yep.
And it was perfect. Just like, it was one of those cool things to see. Like, not only was, you know, hockey was definitely a little bit more popular back in the 90s than it kind of, you know, is a little bit now. We're seeing a little bit more of a growth. But overall, like, you know, the Red Wings were on top, and you couldn't not ever, like, you, if you did not know who the Red Wings were in the 90s, you lived under a rock.
For sure.
Or you had public access television.
And for me too, it's like obviously I'm biased, of course, yeah. but there are a couple of key things about the Wings, especially in the 90s, that I think it's tough not to get behind unless you just have some sort of hatred for the Wings for whatever reason. But the city has had a rough time for a long time, right? Mm-hmm. So being from there, I can say obviously everyone knows, and people love to talk shit about Detroit. So it was really amazing that this team could finally do something nice for the city for a long time. It had been a long time since the city had anything good. So that was great. And then the team itself, they, in my opinion, always had some of the classiest players and the organization, everything about it. Like it was just class from the top down, you know? And again, I know I'm biased, but I think most hockey fans that know hockey would agree that that was the case. I think it still is the case. But if you look at Yzerman and Lidstrom and Datsyuk, it's like, you have like the most humble, smart, mellow, classy players that are also the most amazing players. And I don't know. I think it's easy to root for them and not kind of feel like a shitbag. You know what I mean?
And I must say, like, Sergei Fedorov in the 90s
yes. was the Russian Five?
Have you seen the documentary?
Yeah, man. It's
that documentary is so good. That Russian Five one. Yep. But yeah, like his just him wearing the Nike gloves, the Nike skates, like so freaking cool, man.
Yeah, he was he's a legend. Yeah, that team was absolutely insane to watch. And it's you know, I'm really, really happy to have been able to like grow up with that, because obviously before that era there was a whole lot of nothing for a really long time, and a lot of that was not in my lifetime, but some of it was, you know. And Iserman came to town and was like, okay, like let's build a real team, you know.
Yep.
And he's doing it again.
That was going to be my follow-up question, because I don't know, I feel like the rebuild, I think, you know, because people in Detroit just have, they admire Yzerman. Like he, in their eyes, he can do no wrong. Like as an outsider who's not, you know, personally connected to the team, I'm like, I don't know. This rebuild is a little questionable. I think, you know, locking up Dylan Larkin was like anyone would have done that. Like you got to lock him up.
Super important.
But going through your lineup right now, it's definitely very heavy on like young prospects. And, you know, I know that you guys just like recently called up another goalie from like the ECHL or like maybe the AHL, but you know, the goaltending's still a little questionable. Like where are you feeling like the rebuild is at this point? I know you said like before you were thinking that it's kind of on the upper trend. You truly believe that this is like the core? You got at least like two or three pieces to build around?
I think there's pieces. Yeah. I do think it's on the upward trend. I think this is the first season in multiple years that the team has felt exciting to watch, has felt competitive in every game. Even this has been so crazy with some games that we've gotten blown out so badly. But what's weird is a lot of those games, it still felt like we were there. You know what I mean? Like in the past years, it just felt like it's just like, okay, yeah, this is a pure rebuild. This team this year seems like they're ready to compete. It seems like they have a never give up aspect that they haven't had. They seem to be a threat in each game. And the season started out pretty strong, kind of went down a little bit, then really started picking up about a month ago. And then lately has been going through a shitty losing streak, although finally just beat Chicago right now, which is great. And I think I'm sitting there watching all the things that Iserman's doing. First of all you have to do is look at Tampa to be like, okay, Iserman can do this as successfully as it's possible to do.
I was going to bring that up too, because like with Tampa, like it wasn't overnight. Like it took him like 8 years to build Tampa. Yep. And he wasn't even around when the team actually won the back-to-back. He had already left. But I think his legacy of signing Kucherov, Vasilevsky, Braden Point, he even had like Ryan McDonough, Sergachev's, like he built that team.
Yes.
And like I always say, like Rome wasn't built in a day. And, you know, like, you know, he just went back over to Detroit. It's going to take him a few years to kind of get Detroit to where they are going. But I can see 100% a resurgence of, you know, Detroit being this massive player in the Eastern Conference again.
Yeah, and the way I look at it is like you're exactly right. So regardless of whether or not he was literally in that position when they won those cups, he 100% built that team. He just did, right? He built them. And then what's awesome in terms of like the future, I look at the fact that he built that team. They basically they built and built and built. They got better and better and better, and then they like arrived as like kind of the premier team in the league. And it still took them a while to finally win, but they were there for multiple seasons before they got to that point. So it's like they just hadn't won yet while he was still there. But like, you know, to your point, yeah, it's going to take a while, because like he built that team. They got insane, and then they still didn't win for a few seasons. Right. I mean, look at the Caps. Right. Same type of thing. They're the best team in the league for how many years before they finally won? And I'm not saying that that's always going to be the case, but the idea of it taking some time, even after the team is good, that's just how it goes.
You know? Some people are just hotter than others.
I also think that I would rather have a slow burn and get there slow and grind it out together than like high draft picks and flash in the pan type stuff that have also happened, you know, in many recent years. So yeah, I, again, I'm biased, but I totally trust what he's doing. Every single time I see a movie makes, I'm like, wow, Steve, like he's aggressive. And I'm like, look, yeah, let's do it. Do it. Do what you want. The one thing I will say is I am sad about Bertuzzi. I'm really sad about it. He and Larkin have been super close for a long time. They worked great together. I loved his grit. I loved him as a player. I understand the situation that was happening at the time. So I think that he made a good business decision, but that's the one that has really kind of stung so far. But I support his decision. I'm just trusting him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't want a Tampa, you don't want a Toronto or Rangers situation where you have all these big players and they can't do nothing. They hate each other. They can't play together.
Yeah. Well, and also like, I mean, my understanding, obviously no one knows other than them, but like, you know, he was going to be a free agent. And my understanding is that they were not very close to making a deal. So It's like, what, he's going to let him, he's going to leave for nothing. I mean, or you're going to get something. It's a shitty position to be in, but I understand the decision that he made. It just sucks because I thought he was part of this young new core. I mean, he was part of the core and he had to be, I think he had to be moved again, a business decision, but that one, yeah, that one stung.
That's how I felt with Tyler Johnson. So I completely understand.
Well, we all know I'm an Islander fan, so no one wants to be Islandered where your superstar leaves and you get absolutely nothing, because we know what that's like.
Yeah, well, it still hasn't worked out so far for him.
I can talk for hours about him, and I don't want to seem like I'm super bitter, but I question not him as a hockey player, but him as a leader and a motivator. I just he doesn't have the personality to like put the team on his back. I really don't with Tavares. I don't.
Well, for me, I am never going to be bummed about the Leafs not winning. So they have way, way, way too much talent for way too many years to not be winning, but they somehow just keep not winning. So I love that they haven't won a cup since the 60s, and I love it every single day.
Yep.
Same here.
They're like you're absolutely right. They do not deserve it. They don't deserve it. You're right.
They're like the Yankees if the Yankees never won anything.
Yeah, for sure. But like the Yankees are only the Yankees, and they only act like the Yankees, and their fans only act like Yankee fans because they've won so much.
Yeah.
So what reason do the Leafs and the Leafs fans and media have for acting the way they do? They have none. They don't have a reason. They zero. Absolutely. So every season that goes by with them, you know, a nice first round exit or something, I'm just like, okay, good.
Yeah. And who knows, man, it looks like, you know, they could possibly have to play, you know, Boston or one of those do. Yeah, so like do. that would be just the recipe for them to get an early exit.
Where the hell did Boston come from this year is my question,
dude. Like, they literally have only lost 8 games in
regulation. Less than 10 games.
They're a great rebuild team,
but like overnight they are that good. That is crazy to me. I mean, it's amazing,
right? Like, people in place.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I don't really care about Boston. I don't really have feelings about them either way. I don't, you know, we've never really had any sort of any rivalry. I appreciate another Original Six team. So it's like, okay, whatever. I got no hatred for them. I would love for them to eliminate Toronto. That would be great.
So I just have like a personal connection to your coach. He actually went to the same college as I did.
Did he?
Yeah, so it's a super small school in upstate New York. It's SUNY Cortland. And It's just crazy to think that, like, an alumni from my college is coaching in the NHL. So,
yeah. Yeah. I was unfamiliar with him before Eisenman hired him, just because I'm not really up on every assistant coach for every team, you know?
Yeah.
I do find it funny that him and Blashill just switched places. But like, I know Blashill and John Cooper have been friends for a long time, so it's not that surprising. But like, yeah, I am fairly neutral on Lalonde as well, because I'm just like, okay, well, I'm just going with Eisenman's plan and let's see how it goes. I definitely think there needed to be a coaching change probably like 3 seasons ago. Yeah. I'm glad he finally did it. And it wasn't some big high profile name. I like his vibe. He seems like he's got a good Detroit vibe. When I say Detroit vibe, I mean the Wings have a lot of times just had fairly kind of humble, you know, at least players, obviously. And so he seems chill, and I'm just going to kind of see how it goes, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, it seems like Yzerman has a way of like finding those diamonds in the rough. Like yes. Same with Cooper. Like,
yep.
The dude was coaching like peewee hockey mm-hmm. in Boston or whatever. Like he was the rise to being a coach for in the NHL for Cooper is like, a movie should be made about it. That makes no sense.
Yeah.
I think you look at some of the Tampa players that he signed at the time, you'd be like, what? Okay. Well, but then like they fit into the team and then they became a juggernaut. Like, so I don't know. I think he's got an eye for it. And that's why I'm just like, I'm here for it. Do it, Stevie.
Cool. So, you know, one thing that we love to talk about on the podcast is just like some of those cool crossover stories where like, your hockey world and your music world kind of interconnected. And like we were talking how, you know, Yellow Card has been on a bunch of soundtracks, but unfortunately never one of the NHL soundtracks. So like, do you have any kind of crossover story where you were like, this is epic, like my hockey world and my music world have crossed?
I don't know. The day that the Red Wings followed me on Twitter was probably a pretty happy day for me.
That's sick.
Like many years ago at this point. And it's cool. I mean, like back when the blue check mark used to mean something, you know, you get these, you know, other accounts to notice you. And for whatever reason, like I would always just keep, you know, writing them and, you know, tweeting about games and stuff. And, the girl who's now a friend who was running their social media at the time, she started following me. And then there were a couple of times where I would come to town, and I actually, she allowed me and some family to go and take a tour of the Joe just on an off day.
Nice.
Which was incredible. Saw Chelios walking down the hallway as we did it and was pretty starstruck.
That's so funny because that's literally like, every person that we talk to on this show, like when they meet a hockey player, totally starstruck. But when they meet like a celebrity or someone else that's like in a band that they idolize, like totally cool with it. But once they meet that hockey player, they're like totally like frozen.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, it was a really cool experience. I think like, I don't know, big picture or crossover stuff. They kind of would start playing like some Yellow Card songs, like in between, like at in the arena and stuff. Cool. And which is super cool. Obviously, like it doesn't, you know, it's not that big of a deal, but to me, I'm like, dude, this is amazing. My team is like playing my band, you know? Of course it's always going to be songs that I didn't have anything to do with, but you know, it's still awesome. Anyway. I say that in jest.
Yeah, I think it's like it's more like they're playing it because you're such a fan too. Like it's like that weird crossover. I think we had another musician on the podcast not too long ago who was a big Devils fan, and the Devils actually invited him to light the pitchfork that they do at the beginning of the games. And he was just like, I didn't like that was like the coolest experience I've ever done.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So we always love talking about like cool tour stories like that.
Yeah, it's I wish I had cooler stories regarding that. But yeah, it's just being noticed on social media by them. That's pretty cool to me. That's all I got for you.
Well, and I think you got to give yourself a little credit. Like, yes, you weren't necessarily like on the recordings for some of those older Yellow Card songs, but like you've been playing them for like 15
longer
years
than anyone else.
Like longer than everyone else. Like they're your songs too at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. And I always have like a tinge of self deprecation when it comes to the band's old stuff and me. It's mostly a joke. So,
yeah.
That was before my time. You know, I had nothing to do with that.
Now, do you have any like homies from back in the day when you guys were touring heavily that like you got excited that they were on the tour package because you knew they were hockey dudes as well?
Yeah. So Arun, the guitar player for Saves the Day, is a huge, huge Wings fan. Mm-hmm. And we toured That was crazy for me too in a number of ways, because like growing up, like I loved Saves the Day when their first couple albums came out. Like I was a huge Lifetime fan, and Saves the Day came out and they were like, oh, here's the new Lifetime, because Lifetime's gone. And so I loved them from back in the day. So the fact that we got to tour with them, we actually shared a bus with them in Europe in 2011. And then Arun, their guitarist, is from Detroit, huge Wings fan. So that was just an awesome, we're still totally friends. And, you know, we would just talk about the Wings, all Detroit sports, to be honest. That was super cool. He's the main one, I would say, honestly. I'm trying to think of other Michigan bands that I know of these days. I can't think of a ton that I'm currently friends with, or he's probably the main one. We Came as Romans, for sure. Did some shows with them back in the day. Yeah, not a ton of Michigan fans that are like also big sports fans in our path crossing back in the day.
Okay, and it doesn't necessarily only have to be like a Red Wing fan. Like, for example, you know, I know Ryan has a podcast with Nick from Bayside. Like, you know, Nick's a huge hockey fan. So, like, I'm sure there's a ton of, you know, also guys that from the scene that might root for a different team, but, you know, you probably
Nick for sure. A couple of the guys in Story of the Year, they're all big St. Louis fans. But like, Josh, our drummer, is huge fan. And Amberlin, I mean, they're all Lightning fans.
We had Nate on.
Oh, you had Nate on.
Yep.
And Nate's awesome. One of my favorite people in the whole world.
This is how we scout other bands to bring on the podcast, is by asking you like, oh, who do you know that like likes hockey? So this is how we scout them.
I had no idea that the Story of the Year guys were Blues fans. St. Louis fans. You know, I knew they were from St. Louis, but
they're a hardcore St. Louis like sports for sure. I mean, not all the dudes in the bands are sports guys, but like Josh, their drummer, big time sports fan. Phil, the guitarist, who's not in the band anymore, but he's also a huge fan. He's actually a big soccer fan. He and I was connected over that. But they, they're definitely Blues fans, big time Blues fans for sure. He actually, he'll probably be a good guest for you, Josh, their drummer.
Okay. I will follow up with him
now.
Yeah. I'm going to see him a whole bunch pretty soon here. I can pass on a good word for you.
Yeah. I know it's going to be over the summer, but there are a few hockey guys on the tour too. Like, I believe Andrew from This Wildlife is a Penguins fan. Or no, Anthony, right?
Anthony, I think.
Anthony, yeah.
Is I didn't a big realize that. Penguins Damn fan. It.
Yep. And then, like you mentioned, the Amberlin dudes, you know, Nate is a Bolts fan. So there's some some hockey dudes on tour.
All right. Well, I guess I got to gear up for being on tour with a Pens fan.
I at least know he has definitely like a Pittsburgh Penguins tattoo, like pretty big on like his arm or something.
But he probably got it in 2010, right?
Probably.
Did he know they had a team before that?
That's, already that's, starting
that's
it.
That's classic Pens fan right there. They discovered hockey in 2009.
Yeah. That's the chirping that you need to do like on the run, is just be like, it's like, hey, when the bandwagon start for you?
Yep, absolutely. was it when the NHL gave you like number one picks multiple years in a row to keep the team from moving to Kansas, or was it like before that? Was it like when they were like trying to make Crosby be like the next golden child? Was it when like the refs were just routinely looking the other way at penalties the Pens would commit, or like which point did you discover that hockey existed as a sport? Probably at some point in there, right?
Yeah, I think between Pens fans just becoming hockey fans just because they were just the top of the league in like the 2009s to 2013s, and then my other favorite thing, even though I am a Bolts fan, is just making fun of Bolts fans because they have no idea any of the rules of hockey.
it's just
the funniest thing ever. I love doing those jokes.
What's funny is like I obviously like, you know, love Amberlin dudes, like tight with them. I got no ill will towards the Bolts, and I actually have a little bit of soft spot there just because of Stevie, you know.
Yeah.
So I got no problem with them, but yeah, it is funny like to see fans of teams in general where a chunk, I mean, dude, honestly, like obviously the Blackhawks are like a legendary team, but like they have a whole new crop of bandwagon fans since they got good that didn't, you know, like their newspaper were printing like, oh, this is how icing works. Like, okay, like we have a hockey team now. you know, starting in 2010 or whatever it was, right? So yeah, same kind of thing. I put like the Blackhawks fans and the Penguins fans, like they all just decided to know that their teams existed, you know.
Yeah.
No one can ever say that about the Islander fans, because
that's yep.
We've only had misery and we still just let it happen.
You have not only ever had misery. Let's just hold on a second, because there might have been a year or two that you guys won how many cups in a row, or how many?
Yeah, well, I wasn't born yet, so unfortunately,
okay, but
I never got to experience any of that.
Like, well, as a Lions fan, I can say that we've never even been to a Super Bowl.
Yeah,
so. Yeah, I get it. I get it.
I also had a lot of good years. I know they were before your time, but still.
Yeah, and you know, the past, you know, not counting last season, but the Trotz years were some of my favorite years of being an Islander fan. That was just special. And
I thought you guys were on your way.
Yeah.
We're still hanging in there this season. We might, sure, you know, steal one of those wild card spots.
Dude, all you got to do is make the playoffs and anything can happen.
Well, that's the thing. Like
anything.
But truthfully, the Islanders team specifically, and they literally had an ESPN game last night, and you know, PK Subban's pretending he's sleeping. He's like, "Oh, this team's so boring," because the Islanders are a system playoff team. Like, once we get in, that's why we were able to go on that, you know, those two crazy Eastern Conference runs, is because we do play like a boring system shutdown defense game.
Which can work really well in the playoffs.
Really, really well in the playoffs. Yep. So,
side note, I'm really bummed that Subban retired. I didn't even realize it, and I saw him hosting the All-Star game or whatever he was doing. I was like, wait, is he gone? And I looked it up, and I'm like, dude, what? I don't understand. Like, he had years left. I don't get it.
Oh, he definitely did. I think he
100%.
I thought he fell, like, kind of like, you know, the Dustin Byfuglien situation, where, like, Dustin Byfuglien just, like, fell out of love with hockey. Like, he, like, literally hated hockey.
Sure.
And I thought that was going on with Subban, but then it doesn't make sense that now he's back doing the broadcasting.
And doing, like, stuff. Yeah, exactly.
So, it made me question that too.
Hey, man, Tony Romo is a way better commentator than he ever was a QB.
That's 100% true.
So it could happen with Subban.
Yeah.
But Subban was a pretty solid hockey player.
I would have taken Subban in a heartbeat on my team.
Same here.
Yep.
Yeah.
One of the best out of, like, in his class, I would say.
Dude, for sure. Even just his mobility. Yes, for sure. Big time.
Yeah. I think he just kind of, like, went down that path where he thought that maybe he could be, like, a celebrity. Because he was dating Lindsay Vonn. Like, yeah, and they had, like, a little reality show. And I thought, like, maybe he got, like, that got to his head a little bit.
Yeah.
And then people realize, like, yeah, you're a hockey player. We, like, you walking down the street, we probably wouldn't even recognize you.
I also was surprised because, like, what was he, 33 when he retired or something? As a defenseman, he got a lot more years as a defenseman, you know? So that was surprising to me.
Yeah. Well, also surprising how bad the ESPN broadcast has been. Like,
I miss Gary Thorne.
Yeah, it was brutal last night because, like, the Islanders truthfully don't get too many ESPN games, and I could not really enjoy last night. It was not enjoyable.
I would rather have my team not have any of them, because I love our commentators so much that I don't want any. I hated so much when we would get the NBC Sports games, because they had a freaking Eddie Olczyk as the color commentator, and he's like a diehard Chicago fan. So it's like we play the Blackhawks on NBC Sports, and like one of the dudes is just a straight up Chicago guy. You know what I mean? It's like that's not unbiased, guys. Come on.
Yeah, I did like when Doc Emmerich called games. I love
that. Yeah, I liked Doc. Yeah.
I miss that. Truthfully, the Islanders have one of the best with Brendan Burke, and when he does the national games, I'm sure people appreciate him, because he's really just a true professional. He isn't like an Islanders homer. I feel like he's pretty neutral.
Yeah, that's good. That's always good. I really, really hate announcers that are, I mean, it's like, it's okay, I think, and understandable to, like, you can tell that they're a fan of the team that they're calling, but still just being neutral when it matters in the right ways, like giving the other team credit for stuff and like saying, like, when your team, like, oh, that was a penalty. Yes. Yep. That was a hook, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, just some of the, I don't know, some of the West Coast teams, I feel like some of their announcers are just like, their team can do no wrong. And they're just always, it's just like, dude, yeah, we get it. You're announcing for this team, but man, like, it's annoying, you know?
Lay off a little bit.
Yep.
And I think it's important too, because like Detroit and Chicago, not necessarily like in hockey specific, but in sports in general, they're just rivals.
Yeah.
Like both cities are just such big rivals, whether it's the Pistons and the Bulls or, you know, the Tigers and the Cubbies, you know, they're just all rivals for the most part. Where even like, you know, looking at like baseball, people will think like, you know, St. Louis and the Cubs have more of a rivalry, but you get Detroit and Chicago together. Like they're big fans. Like they even had it in fucking New Girl, the sitcom. You know, about how big of a rivalry that they are, and it's just really cool to kind of see. And especially when you have games like that, you have to have some type of a neutral, you know, commentator, because you're gonna get those people that are gonna be like, no, he's rooting for fucking Chicago, fuck this guy.
Yep. That side note, that's why I always loved that Cameron was wearing a Wings jersey in Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah.
one of proud moment for Wings fans.
Yeah, just once again, you know, hockey being kind of at its peak in the 80s and 90s. I would love to see that happen again. Just more like pop culture references with hockey. You just don't see it too much.
I agree. I think the lockout definitely hurt the growth of the league. Obviously, it's been some time now. But I feel like the league was really moving up when that happened. So that was shitty.
Yeah.
I also am... I'm bummed on behalf of Ovechkin, who I would love to see break the goal scoring record. That definitely didn't help his cause. But the, I think, yeah, it would be nice if the league could continue to grow and get kind of up in the same tier as some of the other professional sports that are, in my opinion, not nearly as exciting as hockey.
Well, with baseball kind of changing things around a little bit too, I think we'll start trying to see, you know, hockey kind of moving up, because it's a little bit more exciting than, you know, baseball. Like baseball had to add the pitching clock to make games more exciting and not last as long. But it's still like, but I think it's just one of those things that like, you know, if people give hockey a chance, and I think hockey is one of those things that like, if you go to a game,
without a doubt, you go to a game, you're a fan.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
And I feel like that's what just needs to happen, is just like have some of these teams, you know, just invite or give out like free tickets. I know like Tampa did it. St. Louis did it when they were starting out as expansion teams. The Panthers did it when they were an expansion team. And that's how they converted a lot of these people to kind of like loving the sports. And like, even like down south, like you have Panthers fans that will literally just bleed red and blue. Like that's all they do. They're diehard Panther fans. Like they will never, like they hate Tampa. They absolutely dislike anything else that's just not Florida Panthers. And like, those are kind of like the fans that you need, just because those expansion teams worked so hard to just bring people in to convert them. I think Nashville is a good, you know, expansion team that did that as well.
Yeah. I think Nashville has been successful, I think, building a pretty decent fan base. I wish the freaking Coyotes would move back to Canada. I wish they would have moved back to Winnipeg. I'm so bummed that missed opportunity to just return to their home, you know, because I lived in Arizona for many, many years. And I can tell you firsthand that Coyotes fans, I would go see the Wings, and Wings jerseys would outnumber Coyotes jerseys by a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Coyotes games. That team needs to go to a city that loves them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not there.
I have kind of mixed feelings on that. I think if the Coyotes have just a deep run, and that's truthfully, like, think about it. Nashville had a deep run. The Bolts have had a deep run. Like, Arizona just hasn't done it yet. And that's the same with, like, the Thrashers. Like, the Thrashers didn't have a deep run, and that's why they haven't been successful. That's, like, playoff hockey is, like, yes, go to a hockey game gets you hooked. You go to a playoff hockey game and you are a fan for life. Like, there's no sport that can even compare to playoff hockey. And I'm not just saying that because I'm a hockey fan. Like, there's no comparison.
I agree. I can tell you, though, that I did go to some playoff Coyotes games. I went to a Wings Coyotes playoff game. And, of course, the place was full of people who just found out that hockey was a sport and were waving their little white towels that they were handed when they walked in and blah, blah, blah. And then the next season they were back to last in the league in attendance, you know?
Yep.
So yeah. Like I, for the fans there, I feel like, I don't know, they need more than one season or, yeah. I mean, I was always told by people who lived in Arizona that Arizona sports fans are notoriously fickle. I'm not trying to talk bad about them.
They are, whether they're Diamondback fans, Suns fans, they're all
Cardinals fans. Yeah, for sure. Like, they're there when things are going kind of okay. I mean, Coyotes had a couple of good years where they made the playoffs and they were decent, you know, but then next year they're dead last in attendance again.
So just move them over to Hartford and bring the Whalers back.
Absolutely. Yes, for sure. Just
break up those Boston fans a little bit.
Yep. Or Quebec City.
Or the Nordiques.
Oh, that yeah. How about don't give Hamilton a team unless Toronto can finally win? You know, you don't get two teams when your other team can't do shit.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, are they talking about Hamilton?
Dude, that was like a discussion for a long time.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm an Islander fan, so it was always Kansas City. And like,
well, that was almost the Pens.
Yeah. I just don't know why that was even brought up. I don't think Kansas City would work for hockey. So
Portland would be a good city though.
Yep. They got a good minor league team, good system there. I think that would be good. I think Seattle out of nowhere is just good this year. That's kind of weird. Like that's interesting.
It was funny. I think we were all expecting the Kraken to be like the Knights, just to like come out first season, blow everybody out of the water. Yep. But it took a little bit to kind of like get their momentum up. But it's cool seeing the Kraken do what they're doing.
Just, I agree. It's just such an unfortunate name.
It is. Well, it's better than the Sockeye Salmon.
The city voted on it, I think, right? And so like, to me, I'm like, okay, well, fine. If they voted on it, fine. But I still think it's a shitty name.
It was between the Kraken and the Sockeye Salmon. So
I kind of wish it was a Sockeye Salmon, to be honest. At least there would be some comedy to it.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, we just got beat by the salmon. Swam up north this winter.
It's so funny. Year one of Bar Down Breakdown, we had Nick from Gatsby's American Dream, which is a Seattle band.
Oh, I'm well aware of Gatsby's. That's crazy. I haven't thought about those dudes in forever.
Yeah. Well, they're doing a 20-year reunion show. Yeah. Awesome. And, you know, this is when, like, the first news broke that Seattle was getting a team. And Nick was like, all right, what are we going to be called? And we were kind of shooting off the names that were kind of floating out there. And we were like, yeah, and we're hearing that maybe it's going to be the Kraken. And he's like, would the fans just be crackheads? And I'll never forget that. I'm just like,
I mean, now, definitely. Yeah,
now you guys are crackheads.
What was that that movie? It was, I think it was Acceptance, where they had the South Harmon Institute of Technology and there were the shitheads.
Yep.
So good. So good. That's wonderful. Yeah, the I don't think Golden Knights is a great name either. I think it's a little better than the Kraken, but I don't know. It's tough to like a brand new team. You have to come up with that out of thin air. So new name, new colors, new logos, new branding, new everything. I feel like no matter what they do, it's just going to seem janky. Like it's just brand new. You know, it's like we look at all the teams that have been around for a long time. It's like, well, I mean, a lot of, they're all so classic. Well, yeah, well, part of that is because they've existed for such a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think the expansion teams have a tough road ahead of them without a doubt. I'm glad to see the teams doing well because I want the league to do well.
Amen. I totally agree with that.
Although Minnesota should have been the North Stars instead of the Dallas Stars.
Of course. I don't understand how Minnesota can't win. That's like legendary hockey market. Like, what? Come on, guys. Like, what's happening there? You know?
Yeah.
Their college system is like one of the best.
Yep. But they're all going to other teams.
I know. But like, why don't they stay there? You know? I remember when Parise went there. I was like, okay, well, Parise and Ryan Suter are going there. Like, all right, now this team's going to do some stuff, you know?
Because they're not the North Stars or the Wild. Once they change the name back to the North Stars, everyone will go back.
Do you know what's funny? And I have no way to prove this, but I promise you that this is true, is that I always said that the Mighty Ducks would not win until they changed their name away from the Mighty Ducks. And when did they win their cup?
The year after.
That's correct.
Yep. That's correct. And I love the Mighty Ducks. Like
me too.
I was laughing because I was like, I thought I was wearing my Mighty Ducks hat, but I'm wearing my Bucky's hat. But dude, Go ahead. I have a Mighty Ducks hat that's in the their current color scheme. I love it.
I was hard rooting for them in 03 when they were playing the Devils in the finals.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously they didn't win. But like, yeah, like who didn't grow up loving the Mighty Ducks, right? You know, of course, now that they're just the Ducks, I freaking hate them, obviously, because of multiple playoff altercations with them. And they were just a bunch of shitbags and dirty players. But, you know, but yeah, the Ducks, I think that's a perfect example of changing the name. Then you are successful. So maybe the Minnesota Wild need to just go back to being the North Stars.
But also, hey, going back to the Ducks conversation, I don't think anybody was going to beat Marty Brodeur.
That's true.
2003.
That's true. I agree. I will remember. I'll say I remember that one moment where Scott Stevens knocked Paul Kariya unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
And he, of course, after the game, Kariya was like, no, I wasn't unconscious. Like, dude, it's on freaking camera. And like you took a breath on your visor. But he came back later that game and scored an epic goal. And Gary Thorne had an epic call of it. He's like streaking down the left wing. And he goes, Kariya, the fans want one. And then immediately scored. It was just like, it was an amazing hockey moment.
So just like, we're kind of like, you know, creeping up on a little bit over an hour. Yeah. We, definitely want to just have you plug away, you know, kind of, you know, what's going, if no one knows what's going on with Yellow Card right now.
Yeah. You do know what's going on with Yellow Card right now. Everyone
yeah.
knows what's going on.
Yeah. Everyone that should know what's going on with Yellow Card yeah. right now, but yeah. yeah, kind of shoot away. Like, you know, you got the amazing tour going on, anything else mm-hmm. that's going on, you know, either with you musically outside of Yellow Card, definitely like plug it away. It's been an amazing conversation we've had so far.
Yeah. And I appreciate you guys having me on. It's been super fun. Obviously, Yellow Card stuff, we're touring, in the summertime. I wish I could be like, oh, go blank, go to our website, go to our Instagram. I don't even know off the top of my head. I don't even know what our current website is called, to be honest with you. That's how good of a band person I am. But I know that it would be very easy to search Yellow Card tickets online and find tickets. And you should do that if you want to come to the show, because a lot of the cities are super low tickets, much to my surprise. My pleasant surprise. We're super stoked to go out and do that. We're doing When We Were Young in Vegas at this point, two shows, that's in October. And ultimately we're just going to try to have a fun time enjoying celebrating 20 years of Ocean Avenue. There's definitely been some confusion online. We are not playing the record Ocean Avenue start to finish on the tour. We're going to play a whole bunch of stuff from a whole bunch of records.
Nice.
You know, some people are like, well, you're playing Ocean Avenue. It's like, no, we're celebrating Ocean Avenue, but that doesn't mean we're playing the record. So we're playing a full set of songs from all the records. I'm sure we'll play half of Ocean Avenue or more, but like, you know, Riot Fest, we played the record in its entirety. That's not what this is. We're going to do a proper tour, the proper set. We're doing Slam Dunk Festival in the UK in May. Yep. We are playing Ocean Avenue there. And that'll be great. And yeah, we're just going to try to enjoy the opportunities we have to celebrate the record this year, you know, and enjoy it while it's here and while people want to come and hang out at shows. It's been a long time and we thought we would never get to do this again. So, and that's true. We did not plan on this at all. So the fact that we have the opportunity and that it seems to be as in demand as it is really, really humbling. And we're really, really looking forward to it, making a great show and, you know, getting out there talking to fans and just having a really nice time. And then the last thing I would say is I actually do have another musical project with Ryan, our singer. He and I have a electronic project called Jedha, J-E-D-H-A. It is completely as different from Yellow Card as it possibly could be. It's just all instrumental, like ambient electronic stuff. Long, like 6, 7, 8 minute long songs, like totally like very cinematic, very, I mean, you could literally call it EDM, but it's definitely not, doesn't sound like something you would really like listen to in a club, but it's, yeah. It's very, a lot of very organic stuff, a lot of piano, some strings, but some like beats and bass and stuff like that. Nice. But our, can go to our Spotify, Jedha, J-E-D-H-A. We actually have a record coming out. We have a single coming out next week. And then a record coming out April 14th. I think that's happening. And that's something that he and I have been working on for a long time, many years, actually. And it's cool that the Yellow Card stuff is happening this year because it will actually give us a platform to be like, hey, also check out this other music yeah. that we're doing. We scored a film, an indie film, a couple of years ago under this moniker.
Nice.
All super ambient stuff. It was amazing, super fun. And yeah, I know it's a lot different than yellow card stuff, but a lot of the yellow card fans that have heard it have been really into it. So we would love people to check that out.
Nice. And then, yeah, I guess we'll see you guys in 3 years for the 20th anniversary for Lights and Sound.
I don't know about that. I don't know about that.
No, it's just funny. We put like a couple questions on Reddit just to see what everyone was like thinking and ask questions. And I just love reading comments from people. It's just so funny sometimes.
The comment sections on the internet are just the best and worst places in the world.
Yep.
That is a fact.
Particularly in YouTube. YouTube comment section is the cesspool of the internet.
Oh, wait till you see emo Reddit subreddit on.
Ooh.
That's pretty bad.
That sounds awesome. I might go check that out. I haven't even looked at Reddit since we announced all the stuff we're announcing. I'm sure people are talking all kinds of shit.
100%.
Yeah, I love it. That's great. Good for them. I will say one last thing is one of the most fun things we ever did online is we actually did an AMA on Reddit, like, I don't know, 2013, 14, sometime around then.
Yeah.
But it was awesome because in the past, whenever we've done stuff like that, whether it be like an interview or like, you know, some sort of chat thing on AOL or whatever, it's always like, you just got to be in like kind of like nice professional band mode and whatever. And, you know, just be like courteous. And of course, we always should be. But when we went into the AMA at Reddit, I'm like, guys, Reddit is a different beast. Mm-hmm. Like, we need to just be how we are. And so we got so like, we got, of course, a bunch of people were super pumped. But we had the classic Reddit trolls just talking shit, and we just ripped into them right back. Like, so many people talking shit, and I'd be like, oh, that's cool. Like, when does your band go on tour? What venue are you guys playing? You know, like, because this Reddit, right? Like, the Reddit trolls are like, you need to respond in kind. So
yeah,
it was awesome.
Dare I say you guys became red card that day?
Yes, that's a good I appreciate
that. That is a soccer reference, right? Yellow card.
100%.
Yeah.
Yes. They obviously before my time, but when they were young, they would use that as a term, like a party foul. Like if you committed a party foul, you would be given a yellow card, and if you're two, you'd get kicked out of the party. Mm-hmm. That's the story that I'm familiar with from before my time.
That's a pretty solid.
I think it's a Florida thing because we used to do that in Miami too.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay. Well, I don't mind because soccer is my favorite sport, always has been. I played my whole entire childhood, soccer and hockey both. But if I had to choose a sport, I would choose soccer. So it's like, I don't mind being in a band as a blatant soccer reference. So.
Well, Ryan, it was a pleasure having you on. Literally, it's just like, especially sharing a milestone like our 200th episode. Thank you so much. We're super excited to see, you know, how everything goes with the you know, Ocean Avenue tour that you guys are currently doing. And, you know, hopefully there's a third date for When We Were Young Fest that's added. And thanks for so much for being on. You're an inspiration to at least, you know, a lot of us that are, you know, in our mid 30s right now that have listened to you guys for over 20 years.
Well, I really appreciate that. And it's super flattering that you guys would want me on for this milestone episode of your podcast. So I'm honored to be there for that. And I've obviously had a really great time. And I'd love to do it again sometime. And thank you guys a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anytime.
Thank you so much, man. We'll let you go. And awesome. The summer of yellow card, man. I got to get my tickets.
Awesome. Hope to see you guys there.
All right. See ya.
Take care, man.
See you guys.